of responses back, emails and different invitations after I did the keynote and the lecture. And it was incredible because there were historians, there were librarians, and there were archivists in those rooms and in those spaces that shared the digital lecture later on. And so many of them started making projects happen that were based on the lecture. And I was happy because all of them were about being inclusive and going out into communities and encouraging people to tell their own stories and to digitize them and to utilize them to broaden their messages against racism and discrimination and oppression. And for people that have doctorates and for professors and all these different industry people to have that kind of access to institutional power and to utilize their positions to get the funding and to start developing the programming, and then to reach back out to us to say, hey, we're doing this program and we're going across the country and we're working with open source and all these different agencies to document social justice movements. And by the way, we were inspired by your speech, and some of this work is happening because of that. Like, for me, that's very exciting because, again, it helps us commend our community and show them the value of what community unity looks like. Like, people that probably only showed up to one Don't Shoot Portland event are going to be documented in these archives, because we're going to go hard when it comes to getting a retrieval of it. And part of being on this show today is to let people know, if you've ever been to one of our events, if you've ever live streamed, taken pictures, blogged, wrote an op-ed, kept information on your social media, you might want to come to this event, and you can go to our site and register.
And how should people sign up that want to go on Saturday?
They can go to don'tshootpdx.org and they can register. There should be a big giant picture on there that says digital archives, and it might be also don'tshootpdx.com.
And what different types of media can be archived? Is it just photos, or is it audio and video?
Audio, video, photos, actual paper documents. There's a lot of information on our website. And once you register, you're going to get like a response that's going to tell you what things to bring and things of that sort. And there's only supposed to be 35 to 40 people in attendance. So we're clearly looking through to see, like, if you're media, then we'll prefer to have you there, especially if you're indie media, because we know that you get to have access to your digital assets. If you've been at our protest and organized with us, of course, we want you there because we want you to be able to have a Q&A with the people providing the information. So general public that has attended protests, come, sign up, get the information. We'll be streaming it as well.
And what's your website?
Don'tshootpdx.org.
Is there anything else that KB listeners should know about this project?
That it's a project all about Portland, and that if you were a part of it, then you should show up. And if you can't show up, tune in so that you can watch the recording, because we hired a videographer.
Well, thank you so much, Teresa.
Oh, thank you.
That was Teresa Rayford with Don't Shoot Portland. You can connect with them online at don'tshootpdx.org.
Thank you.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on upcoming Mount Hood hikes and events organized by the environmental group BARC. At 6, it's Right to Survive Radio. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio with Davey D and Anita Johnson. They'll be examining the Mueller report. Tonight's weather, mostly clear with highs around 55 degrees. Tomorrow's weather, summertime with highs around 85 degrees. Today in history, on this day in 1967, boxer Muhammad Ali was indicted for refusing induction into the U.S. Army. The quote of the day is also from Muhammad Ali, who said, I'm not going 10,000 miles from home to help murder and burn another poor nation simply to continue the domination of white slave masters of the darker people the world over. This is the day when such evils must come to an end. I have been warned that to take such a stand would cost me millions of dollars, but I have said it once and I will say it again. The real enemy of my people is here. I will not disgrace my religion, my people, or myself by becoming a tool to enslave those who are fighting for their own justice, freedom, and equality.
Yesterday, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau updated the 1970s regulations for debt collection. Under the new rules, third-party debt collectors can call and leave voicemails up to 7 times a week. A 1-week call-free period would also be required before resuming attempts to reach borrowers by phone again. There is no limit, however, on the number of texts or emails that debt collectors can send to borrowers. The Federal Reserve notes that there are roughly 25 million Americans currently in debt. With the CFPB reaching 80,000 complaints about debt collectors just last year, debt collection issues consistently remain one of the top received complaints for both the CFPB and the Federal Trade Commission. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will take public comment for 90 days before making finalization decisions on the new regulations.
Uber and Lyft drivers are on strike nationwide as they protest for living wages, job security, and community-led regulation of the rideshare industry. Drivers, organizers, and supporters have been encouraging the public to attend rallies, plan alternate transport, and spread awareness on social media with hashtag StrikeUberLyft and hashtag AppsOffMay8. The strike is being held just days before Uber's upcoming international public offering this Friday. The rideshare company is currently valued at $91 billion. As part of the stock sale, former CEO Travis Kalanick is expected to receive almost $6 billion. The offering will be held by Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and Bank of America.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native groups and New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Holland are calling a federal appeals court ruling on oil and gas permits near a New Mexico sacred site a win. The 10th Circuit Court of Appeals ruled Tuesday the Bureau of Land Management violated the National Environmental Policy Act when approving permits near Chaco Culture National Historical Park, and some permits need further review. In 2015, Native and environmental groups claimed land managers violated environmental and preservation laws when approving permits. The Congresswoman, New Mexico tribes, and environmental groups are seeking greater protections in the area. Concerned development threatens the cultural landscape. LADA High School senior Tule Birdshead will be allowed to wear traditional items at graduation in Oklahoma. A previous request to wear an eagle feather, Chickasaw honor cord, and beaded cap was denied. The student was joined by members of the Native community and attorneys this week at a school board meeting where the board agreed to accommodate the request. Democratic senators took to the Senate floor Tuesday calling for stronger protections for Native women, which they say includes the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, Savannah's Act, and the Not Invisible Act. Nevada Senator Catherine Cortez Masto urged for the passage of the bills.
Women across Indian country are dying and disappearing, and far too many of their cases go unreported, unsolved, or untouched by law enforcement. This is unbelievable. We must act. And yet there is no targeted federal plan or strategy to address this epidemic, even as it becomes increasingly clear that we are failing to uphold our trust responsibility, and even more so, we're failing Native women and their families.
She was among 5 senators to deliver back-to-back speeches on missing and murdered Indigenous women. The senators called for bipartisan action to help end violence in Native communities. Meanwhile, community organizers in Billings, Montana, are seeking to include men and boys when it comes to addressing missing and murdered Indigenous people. Kayla DeRoche with Yellowstone Public Radio has more.
A few hundred people wearing red line the Rimrock sandstone that overlooks Billings.
My
Please stay 10 feet back from the edge. Parents, please hang on to your children.
Reno Charette with the Native American Achievement Center at Montana State University Billings directs the crowd through a megaphone. So far, the movement has drawn attention to the high number of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, but Charette says there are many boys and men missing too.
And we've seen it on Facebook most prominently when there's been young men that have disappeared and they have not found them for a very long time. And if they're found, they're usually not alive. So this is a heartbreak that our Native communities have been burdened with for quite some time.
While Native Americans make up less than 7% of Montana's total population, Indigenous men and boys account for 17% of the males on the Montana Department of Justice Missing Persons Clearinghouse. 34-year-old Hub Williamson, who was last seen in the beginning of April, is on the list. Williamson's cousin, Frank Backbone, is a member of Northern Cheyenne Search and Rescue and says they held a search for Williamson last Friday between Hardin and Crow Agency.
We started at noon and Blackbaud's. We searched until 7 at night, but we couldn't find nothing.
Reno Charette says she and other leaders are looking for solutions through policy change and funding. The Montana legislature recently passed several related bills, including one that establishes and funds a missing persons specialist in the state called Hannah's Act. The governor signed the act into law last week. For National Native News, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, May 8th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Jason Sherman, Kayla Zanis, Al Khan, and Yasmin Kobanoglu. Our engineer is David Kesters. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Emily Gresham Beamer. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Voices from the Edge, Rachel Dixon interviews Onesha Cotrain, former program manager with the Diane Wade House. At 9, it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, on The Heather McCoy Show, Heather talks to Blair Stenvik about their recent Mercury article titled The Future of Trans Healthcare is in Portland. At 11, on Between the Covers, host Suzanne LeGrand interviews Amy Stanton and Catherine Connors, authors of The Feminine Revolution. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures features Peter Bragg, the artist behind anarchic characters Buddy Bradley and Martini Baton. He'll talk about his life in alternative comics. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click Donate.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Just to tell you a little bit about BARC, we are a watchdog group and we defend Mount Hood National Forest from any sort of destructive logging projects or just destructive projects in general that happen in our public land in Mount Hood National Forest. So we've saved probably thousands and thousands of acres of forest just by existing and saying, like, hey, Forest Service, follow rules that protect air and water quality, protect the soil, protect the salmon. And just by being there, watchdogging them, we've gotten them to stop a lot of different logging. And so we are just always doing that because those projects are continuously being planned.
So how we do the watchdogging that we do is by bringing people into the forest and training volunteers like myself in how to participate in the public comment process. Mountain Hood National Forest is public land, and the rules, there are rules and there are laws affecting how it's used that the public has ways to participate in. And BARC trains people to participate in that process. And there's a lot of time out on the ground in the forest. There can be lots of time learning policy, writing comments, going to meetings with Forest Service representatives. There's a lot that we do. So when we say watchdogging, there's a lot of different jobs involved in watchdogging.
Yeah, tons. Really, really tons. And so that's, we're here just to kind of put out a few different things that are happening in the pretty immediate future that are for watchdogging. They're just different ways that we watchdog.
And we want to invite you, listener, to come join us.
Yes, please come join us. There is so much out there. And there's also just so much that you'll never see if you always stick to a trail. We go to places that folks don't go to very often. And we find species people don't see very often. So there's a lot of other intrinsic value to just coming out into the deep woods with us.
All right, let's get to it. What are you doing?
Okay. Well, hike.
Yeah, so on Sunday, the 12th of May, that's Mother's Day, we're taking a group out into the forest on our annual Mother's Day outing. It is open to the public. Anyone's invited. It's really going to be family friendly. I'm leading it with my young friend, Caroline.
That's my daughter.
She's 8?
She's 9.
We're going to be going to Mount Hood National Forest to an area near Lolo Pass where it's close to where BARC recently stopped a proposed timber sale a couple of years ago, the Horseshoe Sale, and where the Forest Service is currently planning another large-scale industrial timber sale.
Wah, wah, wah.
We're going to go there, and we're going to build ferry houses. And, you know, a lot of people don't know that that ferries have really sensitive habitat needs. Did you know that, Audie?
I had no idea.
Yeah, ferries really can't live in a clear cut, and there's a lot of other species, interestingly, that can't live in a clear cut, like red tree voles, northern spotted owls, and Pacific giant salamanders. So we're going to go build some ferry houses, learn about the ecology of the forest, and we really invite families with especially young children who will, you know, like to help welcome the ferries back. You can meet up with us at the grocery outlet parking lot in Hollywood at 9 o'clock Sunday morning. We'll carpool and caravan out there, bring your food, your water, your sun protection, and we're going to learn a lot about the forest and how to protect it and how to love it.
Yeah, thanks, Mia. I think it's going to be a really fun hike. I've been out there. That's a beautiful area, Old Main Flats. Isn't that where the last time Mount Hood erupted?
Yeah, so it's this really interesting, like, little ecosystem in this deep sandy soil from the last time Mount Hood erupted and sent these lahars, these ash mud flows down the mountain in, was it 1861, Audie?
I think it was.
And it's a really unique ecosystem that might not be something you've seen before.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like an earthly planet.
So what's going on Wednesday?
No, wait. Do you have to be Arnold Schwarzenegger to do this hike, or can you be a kid? Can you? What are the limits of who can go?
Well, I wouldn't really call it a hike. It's an outing, and it is accessible to all ages and abilities. We can really tailor how far we go and where we go to our group, and we're not trying to cover any distance, or there's no elevation. It's not even really a hike. It's an outing, and when we go slow, we go deep.
Yeah, it's going to also be, it's a very, very flat trail, too, so don't worry about
too much of that uphill.
All right. Now you're talking about Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing that's happening is happening really soon, and that is our monthly ecology club. And so our ecology clubs happen the second Wednesday of every month at 6:30. So this next one is going to be about native pollinators. We're going to have the Willamette Restoration Project come to the office and present about some of the work that they're doing, which they're a really great organization that BARC has coupled with a lot in the past. What we often go out and collect seeds, and they'll take those seeds and they put them in this greenhouse filled with amazing native plants that they then will be planting in places that are erosion prone or the soil just needs help. And all the plants that they are planting are really amazing native pollinators that feed our local western bumblebee. So cute little endangered bumblebee doesn't have enough food. So they're going to be at the BARC office, which is 351 Northeast 18th Avenue on Wednesday. And it should be really great. It should be really fun. But yeah, and so that sort of ties into another really good event that's going to be happening, which is called Base Camp. So,
woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Base Camp is the big event.
Mm-hmm. It really is the big event in that we do a ton, like a lot. Like, come there just a normal person and leave like an amateur lichenologist. You don't know what's going to happen. You might just leave there with a minor in biology or something. I'm not sure. Not really. But it's a free public camp out. We'll serve you two meals a day. We get a lot of really great food and volunteers come and cook it. And then during the day, we'll be out field surveying. We're doing a lot of beaver restoration work, and we're also doing a lot of post-logging monitoring. We're doing a ton of stuff, and we'll teach you everything about that. And you'll be able to get some like really good time working on these issues that I think a lot of people out there care about.
So I want to say that you don't have to be able to take 2 weeks away from your life to come to Base Camp. You can come for half a day, you can come for 2 weeks, you can come for anything in between. And Base Camp is a time when volunteers collect thousands of hours of information about the forest for BARC. So it's a really, really valuable time to contribute to our knowledge base about the conditions in the forest. And it gives us the material we need to be able to impact timber sales that are happening all the time in Mount Hood National Forest.
I have to jump in because you didn't really explain why it's bad that timber sales happen or clear cuts happen. And I know there's a lot of people that actually literally don't know the science. If you could just take a minute and explain why that's a problem, that would probably be helpful.
That's a great question. And also another good reason to just go out on a hike, because it's a lot easier to show you than to explain it. But when you look at the projects that they're doing, a lot of the projects are geared to create a very homogenous sort of a forest, this early seral environment that are good for just a few species. And so at BARC, we sort of advocate for letting natural process prevail and allowing the forest to maintain itself in its own ways. And if we're going to be doing restoration, then there are other ways to do that that don't involve commercial logging and don't involve getting money out of the timber sales. Because that's what we see, is that we could plan a really great timber sale, but if it's being done by a commercial logging company, they're not considering what's best for the forest. They're considering what's best for temporary profits.
I want to jump in with a couple of things too. So the Northwest Forest Plan and the Mount Hood Forest Plan are the planning documents that set the priorities for the Forest Service. And carbon storage, carbon sequestration is not even considered at all in any of those documents.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Mount Hood National Forest is an incredible carbon sink. And a burned forest stores a lot more carbon than a logged forest. And the logging industry is Oregon's single largest source of carbon emissions. larger than transportation, larger than agriculture. I know. Can that really be true? That's a study that came out last year from OSU. Logging is Oregon's largest source of carbon emissions.
Oregon State University.
Thank you. And so by shifting our focus for what are the priorities for Mount Hood National Forest, we can contribute to letting those trees keep sucking carbon out of the air and keeping it there. Right now, outdoor recreation provides 10 times more jobs than logging does in the state of Oregon. So the priorities need to shift to make Mount Hood more sustainable in the long run for all of us who need air, water, and who need to not have rampant climate change.
And so if people can go down to base camp, you're not just going to learn about this, you're going to learn how to participate in the whole process. Talk about that a little more. What do people learn at base camp? You become a scientist.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of different organizations that come out and teach us things. Some of the most notable, I think, is like NEST, which is the Northwest Environmental Survey Team. They're the folks that train people to technical climb and survey for red treevils, which are the number one food source of the endangered spotted owl. So just by going up in a big old dug fir tree and finding a nest could potentially save a ton of forest from being logged, which it has. Like in our most recent North Clack timber sale, we've found over 50, or Nest and Bark have found over 50 red treevil nests, and that has essentially saved a lot of forest and a lot of species and a lot of habitat, and we just keep chipping away in those ways. Another group is I just lost my train of thought.
I'll jump in with my train of thought that I've been wanting to jump in with. What we're talking about in these logging projects, these timber sales in Mount Hood National Forest, is not just like timber plantation management, but there are still tracts of old growth forest that the Forest Service is still actively logging. How much old growth forest is left? How much of it is left? What, 1% of what there used to be?
Less than
1%. And so in some of these timber sales, the Forest Service is proposing and is enacting in Mount Hood, there are 300-year-old trees being cut to be pulped. And those will never regrow in our lifetimes. And the ecosystems that depend on old trees will never regrow in our lifetimes. And if climate change isn't stopped, they'll never regrow in anyone's lifetimes.
Mm-hmm. There's not really another feeling like when you're going out into a proposed timber sale and you stumble upon a forest like that and you don't expect it. You never really expect it, and then you find this place that you're like, this is ancient. This is an ancient place, and they're planning on treating it like what Mia said, like a plantation, like something made for paper products.
Yeah, like a farm.
Like a
and
farm.
It's not a farm. There are plenty of tree farms. We don't need to turn any more of Mount Hood National Forest into tree farms.
Tell us more about base camp and how people get there.
Yeah, great. Well, we have to pick the location pretty close to the date. So it'll be somewhere in the Clackamas, but you'll have to be announced on the date.
Follow us on Facebook.
Clackamas Forest?
The Clackamas Watershed. But the dates are set, which is August 20th through September 2nd.
So if you want to stay in touch, follow us on Facebook or your favorite social media. We're barkout.org.
Bark-out.org.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 9th Annual Keaton Otis Memorial on Sunday, May 12th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Maranatha Church in Portland. Keaton Otis was killed by Portland police May 12, 2010. Every month since his murder, a vigil has been held at the spot he died. The event will include artists, community members, and leaders, refreshments, and information about the monthly vigils held at Northeast 6th and Halsey, where Keaton was killed. Again, that's the 9th annual Keaton Otis Memorial on Sunday, May 12th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Maranatha Church, 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The More Who Die, The Less We Care, Confronting Genocide and the Deadly Arithmetic of Compassion, on Thursday, May 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education in Portland. The More Who Die, The Less We Care. Why does this occur? Professor Paul Slovic will discuss why people and governments ignore mass murder and genocide. His most recent work examines psychic numbing and the failure to respond to mass human tragedies. Again, that's The More Who Die, The Less We Care, on Thursday, May 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education, 724 Northwest Davis Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven natural foods cooperative open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a weekly farmer's market every Wednesday year-round, located at Southeast Tibbetts Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years, online at peoples.coop.
You're listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't.